EMSradio.com.
EMS information for the next generation.
The EMS Leadership Podcast is a production of EMSradio.com. You can interact with us via email, emsleadership@gmail.com, or call us 303-720-6001.
Thank you for joining us for another episode of the EMS Leadership Podcast. And now here's your host, Chris Ceballero.
Well, thanks for joining us once again on the EMS Leadership Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Ceballero, and we finally got to part two of emotional intelligence, and that's what we're going to bring you today. If you had the opportunity to check out part one, it was a really great opportunity for us to start a discussion on emotional intelligence and leadership. And as we got into, you know, kind of describing it and kind of talking about some of those attributes, we just got a little long in the tooth. And it was best that we bring it to you in two episodes. So we had trouble getting all the guys scheduled and getting it back out to you. But finally, we're here for part two, and we're happy to bring emotional intelligence to you. If you had the opportunity to listen to the podcast, if not, go ahead and go back and check out for some great dialogue on emotional intelligence. You know, the things that we think about when it comes to emotional intelligence in leadership is that it's important for us to have the ability to understand and manage not only my own emotions, but the emotions of the folks that are working around us. You know, and it's really interesting because I used to be one of the leaders who had a very, very quick temper, and I was, you know, I allowed my emotions to dictate my actions. And now, as I've got a little bit more experience and as I've learned the do's and don'ts when it comes to emotional intelligence and my own emotions, it's interesting as I work with my young leadership team, and it's a very, very young team, 20s and young and low 30s, to watch them try to evolve into this process as well. And taking some of the tools that we have for you as we discuss emotional intelligence will really be helpful. So in the last episode, we talked about the five characteristics of emotional intelligence, which is self-awareness, self-regulation, motivation, empathy, and social skills. And we got through the first two, which is self-awareness and self-regulation. And just really, really briefly, I mean, self-awareness is you really kind of need to know what your triggers are. You really need to know that you rely on yourself. You really need to know that your actions and your emotions are intertwined. And it really becomes important for you to take kind of an overview of your self-awareness. Number two was self-regulation. You know, we really kind of had a good discussion about self-regulation. But basically, you have to regulate yourself effectively. You have to be able to not allow yourself to have your emotions kind of rise when people are pointing a finger at you. You know, it always seems that, you know, we're here to point fingers and not fix the problem. And we've got to get back to that mentality. But how you react in those situations, you know your values, hold yourself accountable. If we hold our folks accountable, we have to hold ourselves to that higher standard and be even more accountable. And one of the things I'll add when you come to self-regulation is always try to be calm. You know, we learned that as paramedics, didn't we? We learned how to be in the ambulance and say, you know, things aren't so bad, you know, just relax. My heart rate isn't going to get above the patient's heart rate, unless, of course, they're in cardiac arrest. But anyway, but keep yourselves calm. No, it's not personal. It's strictly business, and I've used that before. So one and two, and we're going to talk about three, four, and five today. That's motivation, empathy, and social skills. But before I do that, and I feel my throat starting to hurt, so I'm going to bring someone else in to do some talking. Let's go ahead and bring on our panel of EMS leaders. And my good friend up there in cold Wyoming is Bob Waddell. Bob, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, Chris. Thanks for bearing with us on all the scheduling issues here.
Well, you know what happens. I mean, we're very busy, and you know, our hobby is that we want to share our leadership experience with the folks that are out there. But thanks for joining us, Bob. It's always great to chat with you. And from a little bit of a hiatus, we're going to Minnesota, and that's JB Guyton. JB, how are you?
Chris, I'm doing absolutely wonderful, and I'm looking forward. I think this is such a great subject and a big part of leadership.
And I'm really interested to hear kind of as we go here, where we are with emotional intelligence as we start to grow our leadership team and our young leaders of tomorrow. But JB, you're kind of new to it. You kind of missed the first one. But if I ask you to give me your feelings or your definition of emotional intelligence, what do you share with the listeners?
I share a couple things. And first of all, let me explain how important I think emotional intelligence is. When we do hiring, especially of leadership, but even baseline employees who are new to the field, I think emotional intelligence is far more of a quality that I look for than even skill. I can teach skills, but people really have to want to and be, have a desire to learn emotional intelligence and have the ability to do that. And so I think it's a huge part of what makes somebody a great paramedic. This is what people talk about when they talk about bedside manner, and they talk about just how great somebody made them feel. So that's the first thing. It's a really important part of our business. The second thing is emotional intelligence is just that ability to understand what's going around you, to be sensitive to what's going on around you, and to be willing to think about somebody other than yourself. And I think anytime you put the people around you first, we talked a couple months ago about servant leadership. Anytime you think about those people around you first, you're able to demonstrate that emotional intelligence.
Yeah, I think that's really good. Bob, how about you? What do you have for us?
I have to agree with both you and JB is that, you know, this is a learning process, and these five components of emotional intelligence is really, it's easy to say it's becoming the foundation of leadership. I think it's been the foundation of leadership. Just many of us didn't have those skills. Instinctively, we've had to learn them. And like you said, we've had to learn and admit to our own faults and weaknesses and go through a learning process to be able to say, you know, we really do care for people. We really do care about the profession. We care about where we are helping to charter this profession. And this is just a process that puts it into plain English, puts it into ink on the paper, that allows us to see that roadmap of where are we going.
Yeah, I think that's a great definition, and I don't know that I could add to that better myself. So if we go back to the attributes then of emotional intelligence, now we talked about self-awareness, we talked about self-regulation, and number three is motivation. Now, I think motivation is important. You know, Don uses on this show all the time, guys, he says, you know, the people are the wind in the sail, and I'm just holding the rudder. And I've used that in my own leadership, you know, sayings, as well as, you know, we'll quote J.B. Guyton, you can't steer a parked car. That's another one of my favorite ones that we got, you know, from the show. But when we think about motivation, it's important that we motivate our employees and we get them to buy into the vision. We get them to help us get to, you know, where we want to be as an organization. But when we think about emotional intelligence, motivation really deals with self-motivation. What keeps you motivated constantly day by day? So, Bob, I want to ask you the question. How important is self-motivation?
I think it is so key, because that's one of the things is that, you know, you look at leaders in whatever profession or whatever realm, whether it is this profession, another one, you know, religious leaders, political leaders, and we've talked about this before, there are so many that are basically the entertainment type educators, leaders, where they give a great presentation, a great lecture, get everybody really jazzed, but within a few minutes of leaving the session or walking out of the business meeting, you're kind of going, what was that? What did I learn? Nothing sticks. And yet, you know, you look at those leaders, those mentors that you've respected throughout your career, and often motivation is one of the things that we don't really put our finger on right away because it's so common, but that leader is motivated about what they're doing. They care about what they're doing every single day. You know, I think that's something that we as managers, especially those of us that are involved in the HR issues, you know, a prime example is we have an EMT, finishes school, gets very high marks, and in the interview process says, you know, look, I'm a smart guy. I can put a splint on in 30 seconds. I can take a pulse. I just need a job. Well, is that because the interview is scaring them to death or our process is maybe not there? Or is that somebody who they're really not motivated? They don't care about people. Their motivation is not caring about people. And what is that person going to be like if we hire them and now they have 5 years or 10 years experience? And, You know, I would lay down, if I was a betting man, I'd lay down large sums of money and say the three of us can name a handful of people within our organizations or within our circles who are just like that EMT, that they are in EMS, they wear the patch, they ride the ambulance, they teach the classes, they're the supervisor, and now all these years later they have the same attitude as, hey, I just need the paycheck.
Yeah. I think a lot of people pick those things up. I think a lot of people start to get those feelings, but how is it that we get there? You know, how is it that you're so ready one day and then over a course of time and you kind of lose that?
You have to decide what's important to you. And that self-motivation is, you know, none of us get out of bed and say, I really don't want to take care of anybody today. I don't want to make a difference in anybody's life. You know, even Chris, after you've had a rough day or, you know, say the rough week, tomorrow morning, you don't wake up saying, you know, I hope my crews just don't call me, even if they crash an ambulance, even if they really treat a patient poorly. You wake up going, you know what? I've got a good team. My leaders, my leadership team's there. I'm learning from them. They're learning from me. The field staff are learning from us also. I think this weekend's going to be a great weekend. I don't even have to be there.
You know, one of the things I used to use, and JB, I'm going to go to you with a definition of how important self-motivation is, but one of the things that when I was in the Air Force is I was thinking about taking a assignment to Lackland Air Force Base and being a training instructor, being a drill instructor. And it really came from an old chief master sergeant who said to me, if you're complaining about the troops that are coming out of basic training today, then you should go down there and you should try to make a difference and put out a better product. And I kind of kept that into my leadership career. When I think about self-motivation, there are things in my career field, in our career field, that we don't like. And as leaders now, we have the opportunity to change that. And that's one of the ways that I get my self-motivation. But, JB, how important is self-motivation in leadership?
Yeah, I think motivation is so important that really it's the foundation that all these other items that we're talking about in emotional intelligence are really based on. Because without self-motivation, you can't be inspired to work on your self-awareness, your self-regulation, your empathy, and your social skills. So it's what drives us at our base. And all of us have worked with, if you relate it to Winnie the Pooh characters, all of us have worked with Tiggers that are just chronically and excitedly motivated. And unfortunately, all of us have worked with Eeyores who just nothing seems to excite them. And I relate a little bit to my oldest son. My oldest son's 18. He's just a great kid. But somewhere in life, he picked up the desire to go deer hunting, and Bob, you'll appreciate this. And I don't hunt. I don't have anything against hunt. I actually like shooting. I just really have zero desire to sit out in the cold. I'm not motivated to do that and to wait for a deer to come by. He works out of a stand and to hunt deer. And he is so motivated not only to hunt a good deer, but he wants to wait for the right one. And he sits up in that stand. He gets up there at 5 o'clock in the morning and he waits till the deer comes by. And many years he doesn't even take a shot because he wants to do the right thing. What amazes me is the same son, to get him up on a school day is a mission. I just can't get him up, but to get up for deer hunting, you know, he's up at 4:30 in the morning and he's in his stand by 5 ready to go. So all of us need self-motivation to be successful. What we need to also work on is to be a leader. We have to be self-motivated to be a leader. So I might be motivated for one thing, but not that thing. And the hardest days are the days that we're torn down the most. Chris, you mentioned early on the way your career started, and I would say the same. I could tell you any decision when I started as a paramedic in 2 seconds or less. And then when I first started as a leader, I had that same attitude, and it took me a while to learn. I would say I was humbled hundreds, if not thousands, of times before my leadership improved to a higher quality. If I hadn't been motivated, if Chris hadn't been motivated, if Bob hadn't been motivated to work through those times where you just felt at your lowest, we wouldn't be in the industry today and we wouldn't be leaders. So it's not only you got to be motivated in the right area, you got to be motivated at sometimes when you feel at your worst.
Yeah. And Chris, let me jump in there because I think JB brought up a good, very subtle point. And it's very true. An 18-year-old son, many of us are dealing with young kids, young adults getting into this field. But we also are dealing with a number of older, new people, second careers, fourth careers, whatever it may be. But that analogy of his 18-year-old that, you know, it takes dynamite and a shovel to get him out of bed to go to school is up and out, you know, first thing in the morning. He's got all of his equipment checked. He's ready to go. But I think part of it is we've got to instill that motivation of doing the right thing. You know, like JB said, his son could shoot at a deer, could shoot a deer, and yet is it the right thing to do? And that motivation to know that I'm making the difference, this is what I want. And somehow we have to instill that ownership and that pride of ownership of I'm going to go out and this is going to be a great hunt, even if I never see an animal. You know, it's a joke with my son that the true definition of hunting is a great walk in the forest interrupted by pulling the trigger. But that's the type of thing I think we have to instill in our colleagues is EMS is a great walk in life that happens to help people. It's only interrupted if you choose it to be.
Yeah, I really like that, Bob. I think that really says a lot. And this is kind of a little strange. This is what I want you guys to think about. As a closing, you know, I usually ask for your closing thoughts at the end of the show, and for the sake of moving on to empathy, I think our closing thoughts are, and kind of formulate them if you needed to, is the folks that are out there who may have hit a rut, what advice do you give them to self-motivate, to get them motivated again? So hang on to that thought. But let's go to number four. So we talked about self-awareness. We talked about self-regulation. We just covered motivation. Now let's talk about empathy. You know, for leaders having empathy, it's very, very critical to manage a successful team in the organization. And one of the things that you can teach, you always hear it with your paramedics, we can't teach them compassion. But empathy is one of those things that we need to have because we have to understand. Bob, what are the best ways, or give us some examples of ways that we can improve our being empathetic?
You know, I think of all five of these, to me, this is the hardest one. And I think part of the reason for that is because some people just don't understand. I've used the example before within my own setting is my older sister died secondary to injuries from a car crash many years ago. And especially right around the time of her death, I had people coming up and saying, oh, I know exactly how you feel. And I actually got very hostile, unfortunately, and I apologize if any of those people are listening. You know, but at the time, I was on the verge of hostile with them, and I'd look them straight in the eye and say, really, when did your sister die? For most people, that was just devastating words because they were trying to be comforting. They were trying to do good. And, you know, I basically cut their throat with my words. And so I think it's one of those things that of all five of these attributes, of all the many different things it takes to be a good leader, is being a decent person is definitely the hardest one. And sometimes I think we just need to take a step back, take the deep breath, and listen and watch on what I don't understand what you're having trouble with here, Chris, but instead of saying that, instead of being standoffish, instead of, you know, being outwardly, I don't get what your problem is. I think we have to figure out why we don't understand, try to put ourselves virtually into that situation and eke out those little things of, you know, your sister died, loved one had a heart attack, this person lost their job. You know, whatever, however big or little that issue is, a lot of folks really cannot relate to other people, other cultures, other situations, other environments. And this, I think, is the hardest of all five of these attributes.
Yeah, I have to agree. You know, one of the things that I've started, and I've said it here on the show, is, you know, we're always taught as leaders, you know, we have to be active listeners. And you know, we have to listen to what our employees are saying. And I've kind of changed that focus, and I've changed the focus in my leadership team to say, I want you to start listening to what these people are feeling. Because if we think back to some of the challenges that we've had as leaders in our organization with folks of, I've got problems with the schedule, and I don't have a babysitter, and I got to get home, and my wife has got different schedules, and, you know, I have problems with my, whatever they are. We've all been there, and we've all understood, and we've all had these challenges, and sometimes I think we forget it. But if we can start to think, or if we can start to listen to our employees and listen to what they feel, I think it's going to give us a better perspective towards empathy. But, JB, let me ask you, what's the best way to improve having a little bit more empathy?
First, I'm still writing down your last thought, because I thought that was so good. I want to make sure I got that down in my notes. So thanks for sharing that about hearing what people are feeling. I think there's a couple ways to learn empathy, and one's the hard way that most of us unfortunately learned it, and that's in a time of crisis. Those of us who have experienced, as Bob mentioned, his sister died in a car accident. I personally was a patient, fractured my femur, and had really unempathetic patient care, and learned a lot from that as an EMT. So some people learn it through some life in crisis event. We've tried doing some video stuff where people, we do some scenarios and people do look at videos of themselves. And I think a lot of people are taken aback at how rude they come across sometimes, or uncaring. And that at least lets them make some adjustments. Now, I would argue it's not teaching them empathy. It's teaching them how to appear more empathetic. And those are two completely different things. I also think that one thing that's really important when you're discussing empathy is some people get empathy and sympathy mixed up. And to me, they're two completely different things. Empathy is understanding how somebody feels, what their position is. Sympathy is more of I don't know how to explain this very well, but understanding or feeling whatever they did was wrong. So I've had somebody explaining to me how they did something they shouldn't have done. I can feel empathetic and go, wow, that must have felt horrible. But that doesn't mean I agree that they did the right thing by doing the wrong thing. So, and that's maybe a subject we'll have to talk about later. I think any time you can record anybody in any kind of patient care process without violating HIPAA and show them how they're acting, that most people can improve with very little instruction from or coaching when they see how they are themselves with patients.
Let me ask you a question, and I want to think about when we're in these situations, because as you said, you know, I'm always flattered when you write stuff down that I say, and, you know, my wife does that too. Usually it's milk, eggs, bread, you know, things like that, but nothing as profound as like we're talking about here. But how is it that we can put ourselves, and Bob, maybe I'll ask you this, how is it that we could put ourselves in a position that when people are talking to us, we kind of get the sense of their feelings, and we kind of really understand what's the best way to put ourselves in that best position?
For me, the way I started to learn that was actually to try to understand when I was in a conversation with somebody and the little voices sitting on my shoulders would say, they don't understand a word you're saying. They're not listening to you. They don't care. And yet then in another conversation, this person was very intent, very focused on you. Is what's the difference? How is it my words? Is it my tone? Is it my body language? And starting to realize this is often one of those or all of those things put together. You know, I had the unique opportunity to spend quite a bit of time with Patch Adams, the real Patch Adams. One of the things that is absolutely fascinating with that man is that when you meet him, and it's not just the first time, but when you meet him, he literally, you get the sense he blocks out the rest of the world and he looks right into your eyes. And you can tell that he's really focused on you. Both of you and the many, many others of our listeners that had the honor and pleasure of ever meeting Jim Page. Jim was another one of those people that it didn't matter if this was the first and only time you ever met him, or if it was the thousandth time that your paths had crossed. Jim always was paying attention to you. He wasn't paying attention to him. He wasn't paying attention to what the next meeting he needed to be at or the next person he needed to talk to. He was focused on you. And I think that's one of the things I really learned, and I'm still a student of, is trying to learn, focus on the person, try to really eliminate everything else that's running through your head, no matter how important or how trivial it is, and focus on that person. And I think that's one of the ways we start to understand how they feel. We're so used to, you know, spending the few seconds, "Hi, my name is Bob. Who are you? Yeah, what is it that you want? Or here's what I want." And we move on. There really is not that personal connection. And I think we're losing it more and more when it's, you know, we've all joked and we've all seen it where you get, you know, a handful of people in the same room and they're all texting each other instead of talking to each other.
Yeah, my kids do that in the house. "Hey, Dad, I got a question." "Well, walk yourself across the house and come and talk to me." Yeah. Kids. It's funny. Anyway, so I want to take a quick break here. JB, we're going to come back and finish talking about empathy on the other side of our break. This episode of the EMS Leadership Podcast is being sponsored by EMS Manager. You know, I just got to tell you, man, I love EMS Manager, and you have to try out this software for yourself. It takes the chore out of employee scheduling and management of EMS providers and makes it easy. It's easy to set up, it's easy to maintain, and it's easy to manage. And what's really great about it is there's a mobile web device, and it's accessible from any smartphone or other mobile devices. And with an easy-to-use web interface, viewable from anywhere on the World Wide Web, managers and staff can oversee, manage, and make requests or changes to employee schedules from anywhere. The pricing is based on the size of your organization, so it's always affordable because it's web-based. Your employee schedule and software is located in the cloud. This means no additional local IT costs to worry about. And there's always free training, free tech support, and free system software upgrades. If you want this for your system, check out the free customizable trial of EMS Manager at emsmanager.net, or just go ahead and go to our webpage and go ahead and hit the link. It's going to take you right to it, and go ahead and download a free trial. I want to thank EMS Manager for sponsoring the EMS Leadership Podcast, as well as many of the other favorite EMS programs from ProMed Network. EMS Manager is proud to support EMS providers and managers through this sponsorship and the support of what we do. Go ahead and show them your support and take a few minutes to check out the free trial at emsmanager.net, or go ahead and download it from our webpage. That's Aladtech's EMS Manager for online employee scheduling and workforce management. Visit emsmanager.net for your free customized trial of this amazing employee scheduling management tool. That's emsmanager.net, or go ahead and download it from our webpage. Let's go ahead and get back to the show. So, thanks for joining us again, and we're continuing our talk about emotional intelligence. And JB, I was going to pose the next question to you, and it may be a little bit a weird question, but kind of give me your opinion on it. Are we creating empathetic leaders, or leaders who aren't empathetic, when we have paramedics on the street that don't show compassion? Is there a relationship between the way they treat their patients and eventually the way they'll treat their employees?
Oh, most definitely there's a relationship between the two, and it goes back to that old theory: you don't promote somebody just because they're the best technician or the best paramedic by skill. What you really need to look for is a person who has that developed sense of person and then that developed empathy. I worked with a leader at one point, actually probably manager is a better word, who when he was talking to his employees would start reading emails, answer phone calls, and sometimes these people were pouring their hearts out and just was unable to even listen to them. I've worked with paramedics who've been that same way, and every time I see that, I think, boy, by the time you ever become a supervisor, you're not going to want to listen to anybody because you don't show that skill today. So I think as leaders, anytime somebody sits down at our desk or stops to talk to us, and sometimes this is tough, you know, you're thinking you got to get home to do this or whatever. If you're truly in that situation, explain it first and then make a time to come back and talk to them unless it looks like something that's urgent. But what I usually try and do, even if the phone rings while somebody's at my office talking to me, I don't answer the phone. I don't look at my email. I make sure I'm making eye contact with them. I make sure I'm giving some good nonverbal cues that I'm listening. I repeat back a little bit of what they say so that they know that I'm listening. I ask questions based on what they say. And those are just basic learned skills to help you become more empathetic, because when you start listening to people, you will actually catch yourself understanding more of how they feel. So when you turn off all the electronics. And by the way, the first time you have an employee who is used to that other style of manager and they sit down and the phone rings and they'll look right at you and say, aren't you going to answer that? And you say to them, no, you're in my office. You're more important than that phone call right now. You'll see a look of kind of surprise and shock on their face. And getting back to what Chris said, when you shut up, you listen, that gives you that opportunity to hear their feelings.
Absolutely.
All right. So that brings us to our last one is social skills. So we got self-awareness, we got self-regulation, we've got motivation, and of course we have empathy. And now comes social skills. When you're a leader, how important are the social skills? You know, when I think of a leader, I think of somebody that has, you know, who's a great communicator. They're able to get their point across. I mean, you just feel the energy that comes from them. And we all know those people. And you know, you guys who are out there as well, we all know those people who are giving us the opportunity to feel the motivation. You just feel it coming off them, the energy, you know. So, but when you think about social skills, Bob, what do you think is the most important component when it comes to having good social skills?
Wow. You know, I'm struggling with this one because I think there are so many social skills and so many of us are socially challenged in different environments, you know, but probably I think the one is the communication aspects, you know, learning to communicate. And I think with what we've been talking about with empathy and motivation, it's also communication includes listening. It's not just speaking, but listening, being aware of your body language and body position. You know, are you in somebody's personal space? Do you have that appearance of, I really don't have time for you? You know, are your words, you know, the classic, even in our classes, for the very new student of, you know, when you say, hey, I'm here to help. Well, yeah, those words can be used in a different tone of, hey, I'm here to help. But how are we perceiving them? So I think communication is probably the biggest social skill that we not only need to learn, but that we're challenged with, because often we just don't know how to communicate verbally, auditory, and physically with people.
All right, I like that. So, JB, if I ask you, how can folks improve building their social skills?
Yeah, and I'm going to take this from a point of view of an introvert, because I am an introvert. Before these podcasts, for instance, I get nervous, I get butterflies. If you put me in a room full of people, I have a wife that's a wonderful extrovert, and I just kind of let her go at one end of the party, and I go to one corner and meet somebody that I like and know, and afterwards they all tell us what a great couple we are. So this was actually something that was very tough for me to learn. And some of the simplest ways for a leader to get good social skills is to know when to be social. For instance, one of our police officer paramedics' sisters died out of state, and they had a funeral out of state, and then they came back to state, and they did a memorial service, and I went because I thought it was important to her to go, and I'm not comfortable in those situations, but I knew it was important for this employee, and so my wife and I went, and I think it was 8 years later, we were at a course together, and she pulled me aside, and she said, I will never forget you coming to that event. So sometimes social skills is just being there when you should be there and just offering that helping hand or being willing to be part of somebody's life in a professional kind of way. I think another way about social skills is learning to be part of the team in the group. Even though you're a leader, you still need to have good relationships with your employees. It's a very important thing. And one of the things I think is so great about the website that you pointed out is they also pointed out you need to learn conflict resolution. So you need to be willing to step into conflict, not with a concept of fighting it, but in healing it. So how do you get two people who are fighting against each other together so that they can resolve those kinds of conflicts?
You know what's interesting? One of the things that I always try to deal with when it comes to social skills is when we talk about conflict resolution, I think that's a very, very important component. If communication is the first thing that is, you know, the cornerstone to our leadership toolbox, I think delegation is the second most important tool we have in that toolbox. But I think conflict resolution has to be up there in those top three. And it's not really how to disarm the conflict once it happens, but keeping that conflict from happening in the first place. So, and now coming in and joining us is Patrick Pianezza. Patrick, I'm glad you're here. How important is that to a leader to have good social skills?
It's really important. I mean, you have to be able to balance a couple of different features when you're dealing with leadership. You have to be friendly without being friends. You have to be able to be social. That way people feel like they can come up to you and talk to you and ask you questions and have a conversation with you. But the flip side of that, and the paradox of it is that you have to be able to be friendly and coachable as well, but you also have to have the ability to have the conversation that may not be comfortable. And so sociability is very important, because if you may have a very hierarchical organization, especially in EMS, where there's so many different rank structures and organizational structures, you still have to be able to be friendly enough and open enough so that way people can approach you when they have an idea or have a thought or a conflict.
So as you start to develop social skills, is there how do you look at that? And I'll kind of open this up for the group. How do you look at yourself to say, I mean, because we don't like to admit what our weaknesses are, what our challenges are, and sometimes our weaknesses are overproduced strengths. But how do we make the determination, do we have good social skills, and then how do we go about getting that experience?
I think that part of it is one, you need to listen. Listen to what other people are doing and saying. Why is one person the life of the party that people enjoy? Not just because they're drunk and we can post their pictures on the internet tonight. But, you know, and as JB was saying, is why is it that he's an introvert, his wife's an extrovert, and yet people say, what a great couple. And they're not probably realizing that, you know, he's off on his own in a quiet area and his wife is visiting with multiple people and stuff like that. You know, but why is that? And then we also need to listen to the feedback, which means sometimes I think we need to elicit feedback from our leadership team, our colleagues, and even our, you know, our crews of how am I doing? What am I doing right here? What am I not doing right here? And take it as a constructive criticism. Set the situation up as a constructive criticism so that there is the positive, there is the negative, and then we need to listen to it. I mean, you and I have had that discussion that there are, you know, little idiosyncrasies that, you know, I think I'm always right. Well, other people don't think that. It's business, not personal. Well, sorry that made you irritated, but that's, you know, that's the way it is. But we listen in certain situations, you know, maybe I don't need to give my opinion. In other situations, they're asking for my opinion. So I need to share that, but it may need to be couched or boxed a little bit instead of, you know, however you may want to look at it. So I think listening, two-directional listening, is key to learning these social skills.
And I think I'll just piggyback off of that, and I'll just say it kind of goes all the way back to Sun Tzu's Art of War. You have to know yourself. You can do, you know, Myers-Briggs, or you can take multiple communication surveys out there on yourself and get them graded. But more importantly is you have to be able to know what you're good at and what you're not good at. And if you're awkward in social settings, or if you're a quiet guy and you're not very extroverted, that's okay. Those aren't weaknesses as long as you have the ability to work within those constructs. And so what I mean by that is the ability to realize that might be a weakness, but then you have to go out and seek out how to do that better. And the way to do that, again, there's plenty of education out there. Toastmasters is an organization that does that kind of stuff if your issue happens to be sociability or extrovertedness. And realize that you're not going to change your DNA. So just because you're an introvert doesn't mean that you're a bad leader. It's just a quality that you have. And so the ability to realize that this may not be my forte, but maybe you're really good in finances. You have to think in strengths, not weaknesses, but you can't. The other issue is that you cannot turn a blind eye to things that you don't do very well, because you're always learning, you're always trying to get better. And the way to go about doing that is, A, to know that those issues exist, and second of all is to call your mentor, call people. You're not in this alone, and seek out what's going to be the best thing for you. And that might be as simple as an online free class, or it might be, you know, a college degree in some instances. It just you have to use your best judgment.
Yeah, I think one of the most important things that I learned socially was dealing with how I met people and how I talked to people. And good old-fashioned Carnegie, How to Win Friends and Influence People, that book was probably more important in my life than any other resource I have. Can't stand the name of the book, but I learned so much from that. And it was all easy little steps, you know, get to learn someone's name, shake their hand, smile, that kind of stuff. So like Toastmasters and Patrick mentioned, I also find it so interesting we're getting back to our first topic of the night. You got to be motivated to get out of your comfort zone to fix whatever issue that you do have. And you got to be motivated enough to capitalize on your strengths and to, as you were saying, Chris, delegate things that you're weak at to people that are good at it. So,
you know, one of the things that I want to get your opinion on, and this may be a little bit self-serving because I always try to find ways to do this, but when we develop social skills, they say as a good leader that we need to learn how to give praise to others. You know, give them the pats on the back. Know what type of recognition that they want. Do they want it public? Do they want it private? You know those little things that that your employees really enjoy. We've talked about writing handwritten notes and so on and so forth. But here's my question. As we get better at giving praise to our employees and our peers and our coworkers and our families, how do we teach folks to accept praise? Because if you think about it, there's no real lesson on how to accept praise. And somebody says, you did a really great job. You know, inside you're feeling like you want to put your hands up and, you know, clench them over your fist and make the victory sign or whatever it is. But usually we're just like, yeah, well, yeah, it was just my job. Yeah, whatever. But inside we don't celebrate that, or externally we don't celebrate that. And one of the things that I want to try to teach folks is when you get a pat on the back, you need to be proud of it and you need to make sure that you're accepting that praise. And I think that's a challenge that we have really in society. So if I can ask you for your experience, how is it that we can get folks to accept praise and to really react positively to it?
Let me, you know, refer to two of the people that I mentioned earlier, both Patch Adams and Jim Page. In my experience, and I know many, many thousands of people experienced it with Jim, is that when he told you thank you, when he, you know, sent you a message, but more so, and for the purposes of this discussion, when he gave you praise in public, as far or face to face, whether there were other people around or not, you could tell his sincerity and his honesty of it, because he looked at you, he looked you in the face, he looked you in the eyes, and I think that's one of the big things that. So many times we hear the, hey, you know, good job, Bob. Thank you. Really appreciate it. Whatever the praise may be, it's just socially acceptable to say thank you. Or my mother anyway, of what's the magic word? You're not getting it till you say the magic word. And so you say, please, thank you. And it's like, okay, great. Thank you. Good job. And it really is insincere. Maybe socially correct, but the sincerity really isn't there. And I think that if we learn from these people who we have looked up to and do look up to as leaders, there was that level of sincerity. With that, they were motivated. They made you motivated to do better. And even if it was, you know, Jim dropped a book one time and somebody picked it up right there, something as simple as picking that book up off the floor and handing it to him. And when Jim said thank you, you could tell it was a true thank you. So sincerity, I think, is a big, big thing. And when people see that, they accept it, whether they show it or not at that time, but it's planted that seed inside, that seed of warmth. And at some point, now or in the future, they'll go, wow, you know, Jim really appreciated me picking that book up off the floor that he dropped.
Bob, one of the things about what you're saying is what Jim was so great at and what so many good leaders are great at is when they thank somebody, they say it from their heart. So they stop before they say it. They think about how they care about that person. So many of those great leaders look you right in the eyes when they say it. And it's very clear that it's not a trivial thing that they're saying to you, that they really mean it. And you kind of get that warm feeling that you were thanked from the heart. So part of accepting thanks is the way it's delivered. Part of, I think, Chris, you said it's a cultural problem in general. I think it's even worse in EMS. One of my firefighters was telling me once, how come firefighters can consider themselves heroes, but EMTs and paramedics can't? And I guess I'd never thought of it that way, and I'm still struggling with that thought process. But I thought that was kind of an interesting way of looking at it. So I think what I've tried to do with my kids and with people that I lead is just stop. And when I look at them, to try and think how much I am thankful for them before I say anything. And hopefully they feel very thanked when that happens.
I think you're both right. I think it all comes down to sincerity and delivery. But to get to your question about how do we teach people to accept it, I think it's just – it's uncomfortable. I mean, even when your patients are gushing, which obviously doesn't happen very often, but – when it does, we usually shrug it off and say, oh, you know, it's just my job. Thanks a lot. And you walk away. What we have to be able to train our people to do is to stand in that uncomfortable space and give a sincere thanks and just say, hey, you know what? It was a pleasure to take care of you. And our training has allowed us to make a difference. And we're glad that you had a good outcome. And it's uncomfortable. It's incredibly uncomfortable, especially when people are showering you with praise and you feel like, I didn't do anything. All I did was start an IV on you and took you to a hospital. But again, we have to look at it from the other person's perspective. And that person didn't call us because it was a simple hangnail to them or a simple vertigo issue. They called us because they could no longer accept or deal with the crisis that they had. So they called out to somebody, and you're the one who showed up, and you're the one who fixed it. So to them, you're a hero. And so while we may not think of that call as being all that wonderful and really dramatic, to that person it is. Usually these people aren't calling 911 every day, so they have no idea what to expect. And so when they're showering you with praise, they're sincerely thanking you for the skill set that you have and for everything that you're doing. And I think the difficult part is being able to make people stand there and just basically be able to accept it and say thank you without shrugging or walking away. It's part of the nonverbal communication skill set that we have there, but that's one that we're not very good at. And to get to your point, Chris, about learning about how people like to be praised, that's incredibly important when you talk about engagement and things as from a leadership perspective. How do you want to recognize somebody? I will tell you, it does follow some generation guidelines. Typically, your baby boomers like to have handwritten thank you notes. Your Gen Xers and Yers, they like to be put on a pedestal in front of people and say, look at how great Bob was, and he's awesome, and because of him, we can do this, that, and the other thing. So there is a little bit of generational ways to praise people, but the honest answer is know your crews and know what they like. Some people like gifts. It just depends on the person, but learn those and then use them appropriately and be able to, when you're using reward and recognition, and tailor it to those people. That's my insight into that. But yeah, it's uncomfortable when people are thanking you, but you just have to say, you know, it's for their benefit more than it is for yours if you're being uncomfortable. And it will mean more if you can sincerely accept it other than shrug it and walk away from it.
I just wanted to add one thing to that as he was talking about the different generationals. I recently was saying thank you to an employee, and he said, next time you thank me, can you send it out? And I can, pardon my, can you tweet it? And I don't use Twitter, so that was a new thought for me. And I said, why would you want me to tweet it? And he said, well, then I can pass it on to everybody so everybody knows that I got this recognition. So I'd never heard that before. And I that was a step where I had to go back and say, okay, I got to learn some new skills that I didn't have before. So
those are those social skills. So, you know, one of the things that it amazes me that, and this may be another topic at another time, but can you believe that we really have to talk about it? Can you believe that we really have to teach our crews or share with our crews ways that they can accept praise for a job well done? And it just it boggles my mind sometimes, you know.
But Chris, I think, you know, there too, we also have to be honest with ourselves. You look at the people in this field that you respect for whatever reason. At some point in time, their clinical expertise was identified. And yet, you know, it's just like I forget the gentleman's name, but you know, the American Ambulance Association has their STARS awards. A number of years ago, they gave their award to a gentleman who is a dispatcher. And he told them when they gave him the award, thank you very much, but I was just doing my job. And it's like, nope, you got to do this. Took him to Washington, D.C., had him up at the pedestal. And the man was very gracious, very humble, but he, you know, when they said, you know, please say a few words. He said, what I don't understand is how you don't understand. All I did was my job. People going into this field aren't looking for that praise, which does make it a little bit strange when we start getting it. You know, thank you for saving grandpa's life. Well, you know, this morning I didn't wake up going, man, if I don't get praise, I'm going to go back to banking school or something. So I think we also have to realize that that's part of our social graces or lack of, our lack of communication is we are treading into an area that touches the heart, but it touches the heart in a different place than why we're in this field. We're not doing it for the praise. We're not doing it for the money. You know, and I think that's a social skill we've kind of failed to promote.
So, guys, emotional intelligence, you know, I think we've come to the end of our talk about it and, you know, trying to understand the importance of being a good leader and having good emotional intelligence. You know, I think we've outlined a great case that we should make this part of our toolbox. And, you know, when it comes to dealing with all those 5 points of emotional intelligence, I got to tell you, you know, I wrote down a lot of key points that I think I have to work on myself. So I think this was a really great couple of shows that gave us and our listeners the opportunity to kind of get some really great advice. So I want to go ahead and start to go to our closing. And remember, before we talked about motivation, and I asked that our closing thoughts be, how can an, you know, because think about it, there's a lot of leaders out there who may be in a rut, or they may put themselves in a situation where they have to self-motivate. And I wanted you to give them advice on how to get that motivation going. And, you know, if I could start off, I would say that, you know, as a leader, we thought that we can make a difference in our positions. You know, I was a paramedic that sat in a truck, and I knew what it was like not to have the equipment to do my job. I knew what it was like not to have my ideas listened to. I knew what it was like to have poor leadership. And you've got to be able to take those things and say, how can I make a difference every day? And I got to tell you, I mean, I've had an egotism problem since I was probably 6 years old. And learning how to get outside that egotism to say, right now, I don't know that I do enough for my employees every day. And that's what motivates me to ensure that they have a great work environment, they have the best equipment that I can get for them, that we take a step towards our vision every single day. If we don't step towards the vision every day, I feel like I've let them down. So when it comes to self-motivation, you've got to find the things that really make a difference. I mean, you're sitting on top of the pyramid, and you have the opportunity to guide, you have the opportunity to lead, you have the opportunity to influence, you have the opportunity to motivate, and those are the things that you should be striving for. So that's my thought on it. Bob, how about you and your closing thought? What's the best way to self-motivate?
You know, I think it's every morning when you're looking in the mirror, shaving, combing your hair, brushing your teeth, I think if you stare at that person in the mirror and show them that you care, that pretty soon, they say it takes something like 30 days, 27 days to start a habit, pretty soon you're going to start connecting with the person in the mirror. Those issues, the 5, you know, the self-awareness, the self-regulation, with that comes that motivation of, why am I brushing my teeth this morning so I can go to work? Why am I going to get on that ambulance? Why am I going to go into my office? Why am I going to go into this budget meeting? Why am I going to go fight for these people who, you know, on day one, looking in the mirror, you may have said, why am I going into this budget meeting to fight for these people who really don't like me in the first place? On day 35 of learning to grab that sense of, why am I here? What can I do better? It's you have a better understanding. I'm going into this budget meeting because I'm going to fight for those people who are out there giving it their all. And those motivations, that self-motivation is going to not only help you to continue the motivation, because we all have our down days. We all have our days where it's like, I'm ready to do something else. But also those people around us of, you know, why is Chris continuing to fight for us? He doesn't invite us to his house for barbecues because he's the boss. He can't be my personal friend, but he's the boss. You know, he's motivated because I saw him take care of that little old person on a transfer. I saw him take care of the person in class who really was struggling with a simple concept. He's making a difference every day. And I think we need to say that to ourselves and to the people around us of, you know, Chris, and I know you've heard it before, you know, I've said it for many, many years, and it's not a death wish by any means, but if I die today, I want my family and my friends in good conscience to be able to put on my gravestone, he made a difference, most of it positive. And that, I think, as we do that every day, motivate ourselves, it comes from the heart. Both, you know, all three of you guys have said it. It comes from the heart. But we have to make sure we have the heart to motivate ourselves first, and then we can motivate the people around us.
Very well said, Bob Waddell. How about you, J.B. Guyton? What's a great way to self-motivate?
I think the first thing for a leader to recognize is every leader has down times. Every leader has days, weeks, maybe even a month or two of times when they don't feel motivated, they don't feel energized, they don't feel excited. Most of us, that comes later, but some people experience that earlier in their career. And a true definition, I think, of a leader isn't that you don't have down times. It's you take the time and the energy to dig out of those down times to conquer that. And that's what makes a leader. So when I feel down or frustrated or unmotivated, one of the things that I try to do, and Chris, you said this, was I try and remember the way it was. I try and remember the things that turned me off the most. And I don't spend much time on that, but then I move right to what have I done to change that, and what have I done to make some of the best times. And then I really try and concentrate on how things are better because I've been a leader and because I've made some good decisions. And then I try and do a quick assessment of what have I not yet done that I need to still do.
And finally, last but not least, Patrick Pianezza, what do you leave him with?
Well, I want to piggyback off of what Bob said about looking at yourself in the mirror, and I've got a foolproof way, and that is simply when you look at the mirror, just smile and say, that is the most beautiful human being I've ever seen in my life.
That's the way I do it.
You do that for a couple of weeks, golden.
I actually have my wife applaud every time I walk into the room.
That is pretty awesome. Good luck with the phone calls on that one.
But she does it when I leave the room too, so I don't get that.
Don't worry, it's she told me about it. It's fine. Like Chris was saying, I think it's about small victories. So every leader has a downtime. Every leader is going to second guess himself and question themselves, and that is something that is natural. It should be occurring. The issue becomes is if all you're doing is looking at the negative. And I strongly, strongly urge you, whenever you have meetings or staff get-togethers or even shift meetings, start with praise. When you start your meetings with praise, it will change your organization. So what I mean by that is when you're sitting in IST before you start learning about, the cardiac system, go in and say, hey, I want to praise somebody. I want to praise, you know, Chris for cleaning the truck out when, you know, Bob was on a call and it was a bad trauma call. And then you get that started in the room and everybody kind of leads with praise for other people. And you can call it popcorn, you can call it praise moment or thank you moments, whatever it is that you want to do. But that's really a good way to help start to solidify some positivity in your organization. And personally, you have to start thinking of small wins. So if you're a leader and you're not motivated and it's tough to get out of bed and your staff don't like you, that it's a bad budget season, pick your favorite excuse. You have to start looking at the small victories that you had. So like JB said, I take a look at the way it was today versus the way it was yesterday. And even if it's not nothing monumental, you didn't go out and buy them a whole fleet of new trucks, but you were at least able to get new tires. That's the kind of stuff that you have to key in on. And, you know, without me, maybe that would not have happened. And you start looking at the little things that you're doing right. And by focusing on those things that you're doing right, you'll eventually find the motivation. And the other thing that I do personally, and it was tough because, you know, everybody's got days that they don't want to go to work. I always try to look at it from the other person's perspective. Like my job today, I may not save anybody's life in a dramatic fashion like they'll put on television. But you know what? I'm going to make a difference in that person's life. And that to me was worth, you know, getting out of bed and putting a uniform on and going out in the rain and the cold and the snow and playing in the mud, even for calls that I particularly didn't think were emergency calls. But it's that calling to be able to say, you know what, I'm here and I'm trained and I'm lucky enough to be able to provide a service to these people that can't deal with it on their own, and that's what I'm here for. And then lastly, being in a hospital makes it very easy to get motivated, because on my worst days, I'll just take a stroll through the ICU, and that's a very quick way to bring you back to real life in a heartbeat. You can walk around there and go, you know what, I might be having a terrible, terrible day, but you know what, it's better than that guy or girl. And that's the way I bring myself back to center and get myself excited about the things that I do. And talking to your people, because they've got the fire. We just have to learn how to feed that fire. And feeding that fire will lead you to be successful in your organization.
Really great closings. And let's talk about you a little bit quick, Patrick. And congratulations on being the host of your own show, the In Pursuit of Excellence on EMS Roundtable.
Thank you. It's a ball. We're trying to get it up and running. Hopefully people are listening.
We got some pretty good numbers. So if you want to go ahead and check out Patrick So, go ahead and go to Facebook, and you can go to EMS Roundtable and become a fan. And every time he schedules a show, you guys will be able to pick it up and enjoy it there. And we'll also start posting them on the EMS Leadership as well, so folks can kind of get over there and check out what's going on. But for Bob Waddell, J.B. Guyton, and Patrick Pianetta, this is Chris Subbala. I want to thank you for joining us. And remember, take the time to work on your self-awareness, your self-regulation, your motivation, your empathy, and your social skills. And what you'll do is you'll find that you will excel as a leader and be the best leader that you could be for your organization, for your career field, but most of all, for your people. Everybody, have a great night.